third Sunday in Advent. And it's particularly interesting Sunday in many ways, but liturgically it's represented often by this rose-colored pink candle that we light on the Advent wreath. And what that symbolizes, people have gone back and forth about it, but the idea behind it, which I think is nice, is that it represents the commingling of the white and light of Christ with the dark of the purple. So it begins to give, especially during a time when there were not TVs or the internet or things, it gave a certain amount of visual emphasis to the coming of Christ into the world. And I find it a beautiful image, and it's traditionally called Gaudete Sunday, which is rejoice in Latin, and it comes from the beginning of the traditional Mass that was Gaudete Dominus Semper, like rejoice in the Lord always, and this comes from the Apostle's writing to the Philippians, where he says the same thing, rejoice in the Lord always, and again, I say rejoice, which I love. I love the again there, because it's not just rejoice once, but again, I said rejoice. And I love that because it's this exhortation, this to his people, to his flock, that this is what we do. We rejoice. Now, it's funny. I was not funny, but it's interesting in light of this Sunday. Yesterday, I had the pleasure, honor, and somewhat unexpected, completely unexpected honor of being involved in the Friedenslicht aus Bethlehem celebration that they have. If you're familiar with this, it's a, I think it's set up by the Scouts, but it's a worldwide scouting thing as far as I could tell. I mean, they had representatives from the Scouts and the guides from all over the world, and they take a light, a flame from the, I assume, a church in Bethlehem or something, and they get permission. I mean, goodness knows how they get permission to fly a lit flame these days, but they do. It goes to show that the world, there is still hope. And so they fly a lit flame from Bethlehem to Austria, and then this flame is taken other sort of Bundeslands or whatever they're called here, the little states, all have their own official light, and so they take a light from this, and then I believe it's on December 24th, you can go to your local post office and take a piece of this light that has come from Bethlehem and bring it back to your Christmas tree and light your own Christmas tree, and it's a beautiful image. I mean, it's not even an image, it's actually something that, I mean, the logistics of it alone are admirable and beautiful, but it was a wonderful experience for me, and I was... Patrick had said, well, you know, show up at 2 o'clock. You might have to read something in English. Don't worry. And so I assumed it would be maybe a congregation double this size. And it turns out to have been this enormous event with TV cameras. And, I mean, I felt, you know, like maybe how a movie star would feel a little violated by all of the pictures from every single angle, you know, and all the flash bulbs and things. And well, there you have it. I was in the middle of this celebration of the Friedenslicht. But what was sad for me, or not sad, but what was interesting, was that it began, of course, with this litany of, sadness, really. This church service, which was a church service, which I think, coming from the U.S. to see the intersection of the two, was warmed my heart, I must say, that it was this secular scouting thing that was also recognizing the interplay of church and state. It was nice. That's an aside. But it began this church service, and then we had this huge screen where it was basically went down the list of all of the places in the world that are have the absence of peace and the famines and the wars and the orphaned and even the ecological disasters they had. And so you're sitting there saying, well, goodness, this is dark. This is a dark place. And of course, the point of this was that into this darkness has come the light. But it was interesting to me because I think that what is actually happening with the plethora of images that are available today, with the fact that you can't live you know, in Niederösterreich anymore, and sort of maybe you see a handicapped person every now and then, or possibly you saw or you heard about some starving people in Africa, but you are constantly, we are inundated with the suffering of the world. And this is no accident here in Europe particularly. I mean, you know, many people have said, perhaps rightly, that the aftermath of the 30-year, two-installment war in the beginning of the 20th century destroyed the hope of many, because how could God exist and allow this to happen? And the power of the church to make any real difference was affected, and the power of the goodness of humanity for sure was brought into deep and abiding today suspicion. And yet we stand here as Christians and continue to hear this Gaudete, rejoice. And again I say rejoice. And so how do we reconcile these two? Well, the Christian gospel has had to come into conflict with this seeming disconnect between rejoice and reality from its very inception. I mean, we, of all people, the ones who look and celebrate a crucified God, are the ones who are brought face to face every day with the seeming paradox that is the God who has died, or the crucified who we exalt. And this was nothing new for the beginning. This was a foolishness for the early Christians. Your God is who? Your God is the crucified one? I mean, Patrick has found this beautiful image that in order to mock early Christians, there was this picture that they would have a donkey crucified on a cross. And it was like, this is your God, you silly, silly Christians. The weak, powerless one who was apparently defeated by the world. The one who is the anything but light. The one who is, in fact, associated, I mean, certainly in the ancient world, if you're crucified, with darkness. And yet, we are the ones who uphold this God. And how is that? I mean, that's a good question. How is that? I mean, I think many people have lost hope in the power of this message. Many people have written Christianity off as many as just another philosophy that might help some people get through the day, but by and large, it's just, as Marx famously said, an opiate for the masses. And, you know, we have this as we approach Christmas. It's funny that with all of the celebration and worship and beauty, it's almost like it's in proportion to the actual, in my experience and belief, deep sadness that comes with Christmas. Because every Christmas, we can't help but think back to that time when we believed in Santa Claus. Or we can't help perhaps think back when we were children sitting with our parents, or if we were parents when our children were small, or when our husband was here, or when our grandfather used to open up cut the Christmas goose, and he's no longer here. And there's always around Christmas in particular this empty chair, or son that now has a job. I mean, I'm very sympathetic to this. I now have a job that requires me to be, if anywhere, in my job on Christmas morning. And so I have, my parents have this experience of their adult child no longer being their baby. And it's they're proud of me and things, but there's a sadness there. And this is a sadness that pervades many throughout the holidays. And it's connected to this darkness, because when we are overcome by it, or when we don't have the light of Christ, then we lose, and we're overwhelmed, and we do, in fact, lose hope. And so the Christian message into this has not been a superficial or saccharine sort of covering over of the problems and saying, listen, You know, it's not really as bad as you think, or things are really going to get better, or look on the bright side of life. It's never been about that at all. Which is why, I mean, if anything, we're wearing purple during Advent, like the earliest Christian iconographers had the little baby Jesus coming down from heaven, signifying the incarnation, already with a cross. And that is where we wrap our arms around this dichotomy between the darkness of the world and Gaudete, rejoice, because we have been given a gift. And that is not a new mindset or a sort of a stiff upper lip, but we have been given hope. And this is what we rest in. We rest in the fulfilled prophecy that we heard from Isaiah today, that the lame shall leap, that the blind shall see, that the deserts will spring with living water. And each and every Christian who, in light of the darkness of the world, has been able to stand up to it and say, I have hope, I rejoice, and again I say, I rejoice. These are the people who, from whom this water flows, for whom their lameness has been overcome. And these are the people who will continue until Christ comes again to rejoice and again rejoice. And thanks be to God. Amen.